The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private. Trust Ireland's leading private hospitals with locations nationwide, including Dublin, Cork and Limerick.
This is News Talk.
Now, we've all learned in the last few months that uncertainty and the pandemic go hand in hand. With one of the many questions, can Europe survive the pandemic and how might it reshape the continent and the EU financially? In his new book, former Greek finance minister and renowned political commentator Yanis Varoufakis fast forwards to 2025 and offers a glimpse of an alternative reality through the eyes of three characters: a libertarian ex-banker, a Marxist feminist, and a maverick technologist. The book is called Another Now, and as part of the International Literature Festival in Dublin, Yanis will be in conversation with Áine Lawler this coming bank holiday Monday. We'll give you more details on that later on. But now it's good morning, Yanis Varoufakis.
Good morning, Pat. It's so great to be back on your show.
Yeah, it's been a while. I think you were with us for the Dalkey Book Festival or perhaps Kilkenomics. But anyway, it's good to hear your voice again. I suppose this pandemic is an opportunity for everybody at some level to press the reset button. And that is what you've kind of imagined.
That's what I try to do, and I try to do it in a nuanced way, because whenever you're talking about the future and a blueprint of a kind of utopia, you know, what you imagine the world could be like if it is to be, you know, a non-dystopic future in which we want to live, one has to be nuanced and one has to be self-critical. So this is the first time I wrote a book about economics, about politics, like a novel, because I wanted to populate it with differently minded people that would, through their conversations with one another, keep a check on my megalomania as an author.
Now, I credit, it appears, for the genesis of this book can be given somewhat to Pascal Donoghue, a man for whom I suppose historically you've had little respect.
Oh, no. Of course I have immense respect. Look, is it not time that we can respect people that we disagree fiercely with? It is. You know, I'm a strong believer in combining respect with utter disagreement. I have all the world's respect for your finance minister, even though I disagree entirely with him.
Yeah. I mean, you've said recently, Yanis, Pascal Donoghue, you described him as a chronic and pathetic finance minister, but you say the feeling is mutual.
Yes, so it's the same thing about me. But that's fine, isn't it? What's wrong with that?
That's fine.
We could still be mutually respectful.
How does Pascal's references to your previous work inform the writing of this one?
Oh, Pascal wrote I can't remember, published a review of my previous book, which was a brief history of capitalism, effectively. It was called, the title was Talking to My Daughter. And it was a very generous review, even though he mentioned our huge disagreements. He said that my explanation, interpretation, analysis of capitalism is actually quite useful, even for my political opponents like him. And then he, in the last paragraph, he said something which I thought was absolutely right. He said that, okay, this gentleman doesn't like capitalism, but what's the alternative? And we leftists, radicals, critics of capitalism, it's about time we answer that question. So I sat down, not just because of Pascal's review, mind you. This is something I've been struggling with for decades now. And I decided, okay, it's time to put my money where my mouth is, and as a critic of capitalism, say, okay, so how could the world work today? In a way that is liberal, democratic, where, we don't have the trials and tribulations and the tyranny of the Soviet Union, when and also that, we move beyond the tired social democracy that effectively died sometime in the 1980s. Could we envisage a world with markets, with a boisterous democracy, with perfect freedom, and without capitalism? So I wrote this book.
Now, you also credit your partner because she said to you at some point, you can go on all you like about how bad capitalism is, but, you know, explain what the alternative is. And that's what you've tried to do. Now, I'm very interested in the idea that, for example, employment, that everyone would have a basic income anyway, but those who are in employment would obviously earn more. Everyone would have a share in their company for, or with whom they worked, I should say, because everyone would be a shareholder. But not everyone, even though they had a share each, would get the same wages. Explain.
Imagine a company in which those who work in it, whether they are the designers, the software engineers, you know, the secretaries, the caretakers, they have one share each. So effectively, you know, exactly a democracy. We all have a vote in matters of state. Similarly, we could have a vote in matters of the corporation. And we had to decide as a body of self-interested and community-interested people how to split the revenues of the firm. So one chunk would go to research and development, another to fixed costs, another to a common basic wage for everyone. And then we have the bonuses. So imagine that we decided together how much would go to bonuses, and then each one of us gets, you know, let's say, 100 brownie points, and we distribute it amongst everybody else, not to ourselves, in proportion to what contribution we think they made to the company. And remember, if we don't give those that we to those whom we think have contributed significantly to the company, they will leave, they will go to another company, and then we will lose them, and then we are going to be worse off. And imagine that the bonuses are distributed in proportion to the total number of brownie points that each one of us got. So you can have a lot of inequality within the corporation in terms of remuneration, but it is democratically and communally decided.
I could see at the moment in the pandemic, for example, the people on the front line, the nurses, in that situation, you'd pay them far more than you'd pay the managers, for instance.
Well, would that not be fantastic? I mean,
yeah.
Over the
I'm not saying a bad thing. I'm saying, you see, this is maybe something that would appeal to many, many people. The people, as our Taoiseach, our Deputy Prime Minister Leo Varadkar talks about, the people who get up early in the morning, who don't depend much on the state for anything, who pay their taxes and so on. And the people who are prepared to work hard would say, yeah, this sounds very good. The harder I work, the more I do, the more I get paid. Which is not the way it is at the moment, necessarily.
Indeed. And, you know, take the pandemic, take patients in wards, watching the hard-working nurses. Would it not be good if they had a saying, who gets what? We need managers. Management plays an important role in hospitals, in corporations, in, you know, in railways, in airports. But what has happened over the last 30, 40 years, this great disconnect between a relative contribution and the remuneration of managers, you know, it's actually detrimental to society generally. It's not just unfair. This kind of inequality means that you have a class of so-called super managers that are effectively signing off a huge amount of economic energy that does not get invested into good quality jobs, not even into technologies.
You know, another model might be appropriate, because we saw the Soviet model of Marxism, which was certainly an imperfect model of Marxism. We see the greed of capitalism run rampant in the United States. So perhaps a third way, you might describe it as a social democratic way, I don't know. But how do you get from where we are to where you want to be? Because it's great to have an ambition, but what's the what is the pathway?
That's chapter 5 of my book, Pat. Not that I... Yeah. Look, it is a novel. What I try to do there is to imagine two things: how things could work and how we could get there. That's, you know, the second part is your question. And what I imagine that after 2008, when we all realized that there was something deeply flawed about the capitalism that we have, with the collapse of Wall Street, what happened in Ireland, what happened in Greece, and so on, imagine we had done things differently. Instead of demonstrating in the streets, like, you know, Occupy Wall Street, or the City of London, or our demonstrations here in Greece, we did things differently. And I explained how we could have done things differently, how we could have used financial engineering in order to make sure that Goldman Sachs and the rest of the parasites are simply defunct. And we constructed a different now. Another now, as I call it. So I create this story of three main characters whom you mentioned before, who in 2025 discover that in 2008 there was a kind of bifurcation of the time-space continuum, and you know, different versions of ourselves did things differently. And they speak to their own alter egos in that other now, and they discover how things transpired. How did that other now occur, eventuate, and what does it entail regarding, you know, who owns houses, who owns the land, what kind of auctions are used in order to make sure that you have an efficient use of land and resources, what happens about with money, banking, international trade, what happens to the International Monetary Fund, what is there to replace it. So this is what I try to do in another now.
At the moment, what you're observing with this pandemic, where the state is moving in pretty much every developed economy, and it's supporting private business. In Ireland, for example, we have a system whereby businesses that cannot open, like bars and restaurants and so on, cannot open during this lockdown, are compensated by the state directly. I mean, what do you make of that kind of thing? Because I would suspect that you might have approved of that when Greece was in dire straits back in the recession.
Well, what the Irish state, the Greek state, the French state are doing today is absolutely essential. If we let these businesses shut down, you know, there is a path dependence. Reopening a shut business is much harder than allowing it to close, and it is much easier to keep it afloat. By the way, my criticism of what the Troika was doing to our countries, both to Ireland and to Greece, is that they were not even following the rules of capitalism. They were allowing zombie banks to effectively suck the living daylights out of healthy businesses and out of the private sector and out of the middle class. They should have allowed them to go bankrupt, especially in Ireland, especially the ones that were already bankrupt. And in the case of Greece, they should have allowed the Greek state to go bankrupt instead of giving a gigantic loan to a bankrupt state, pretending that it was not bankrupt, on conditions of austerity that shrunk magnificently the incomes from which they would have to repay the money. The money would never be repaid. So we have to learn lessons. We have not learned them. The European Union has responded with this recovery fund in a way that proves that they've learned the lessons of propaganda. They are much, much better now at propaganda than they were in 2008, 9, 10. But when it comes to the actual reality, I don't think that the Irish government is getting enough support from the European Union during this pandemic. I don't think any government is getting enough support from the European Union. The European Union has found a way of talking big numbers like 750 billion that is not there. The real sum will be less than 300 billion in the end, which is a very small percentage of the amount of fiscal stimulus that Europe needs.
At the same time, money is so cheap at the moment that banks are even charging you to hang on to your money in their vaults. So what's going on at the moment is countries are borrowing, governments are borrowing, and even talking to our own finance minister, Pascal Donoghue, he talks about, you know, these debts will really come back to haunt us maybe in 10 years, 20, 30 years, because many of them are long-term debts, which will roll over and be rolled over again and again. And with time, with inflation, and with the growth of our economy, will become less painful and perhaps even painless.
That may be so, but what really upsets me and angers me is what happens with the trillions that our central bank, the ECB, is printing. The ECB has to print trillions. I'm not criticizing that. In order to refloat the sinking vessels around the European Union. But the way in which they're doing it is just a scandal. Think about it, Pat. So Christine Lagarde, not Christine Lagarde, but you know, the ECB prints a few billion every day. It would be fantastic if they simply credited it in the bank accounts of every European in equal sums. But instead of doing that, What they do is the ECB calls up, let's say, Deutsche Bank or Societe Generale and says, I've got a few billion that I printed today. Do you want it? Zero interest rate. Of course, Deutsche Bank is not going to say no. It takes it. But then he thinks, okay, who am I going to lend it to? Then it's not going to lend it to you or to our listeners or to struggling businesses because they
buy a car, set up a business. They're looking for a way to turn that into a profit.
Yeah, but they're not doing that because they're quite correctly fearing that, overall depression means that they won't get their money back. So what Deutsche Bank does is it picks up the phone and calls Volkswagen. Yeah, a large corporation. It says, I've got a billion for you. Would you like it? 0.02% interest rate. Volkswagen, which is already sitting on a pile of cash and is not investing it, fearing that people out there would not have the money to buy expensive new electric cars that can compete with Tesla, let's say, and they're not investing in these technologies as a result. So Volkswagen says, okay, it's very cheap. Give it to me. And you know what Volkswagen does with this billion? It goes to the stock exchange and buys shares of Volkswagen. So the shares of Volkswagen go through the roof. The bonuses of the directors sitting in the board of directors go through the roof. They're all doing really very nicely. But there is no investment in green technologies, in battery technologies, in Tesla competitors in Europe. So we are stagnating, and all this money that the ECB is printing is being wasted. That is a scandal.
So the alternative way, if the ECB decided to stimulate the European economy, would be to give us all cash. So we could spend and therefore keep all the businesses going. That's the theory.
And that's not my idea. This is not just the idea of a leftist. Firstly, something that has already been tried and tested and worked. Let me remind you that in early 2009, the Australian government at the time did exactly that, the Australian government. On average, they put something like 7,000 euros, I'm converting from Aussie dollars to euros, in every family's bank account overnight. And the result was that Australia was the only advanced country that did not have a recession in 2008-2009. So it's worked. Recently, last March, it happened in Hong Kong. The Central Bank of Hong Kong put $1,250 American dollars, not Hong Kong dollars, in every bank account in Hong Kong. And that stimulated the economy because that means that, everybody goes out there and spends more money. So businesses don't need to be supported directly by the government. The central bank does not have to print money that goes effectively to commercial banks that inflate asset prices without creating any kind of economic activity. So it's already been tried and tested. And, I proposed that back in March. I remember around the 10th of March. And I proposed that something rather mild, 2,000 euros in every bank account. And I did a back of an envelope calculation. That was 750 billion euros for the Eurozone. And 3 days later, after I was accused of having reinvented the money tree and so on, as you can imagine, Christine Lagarde comes out. I'm not saying that it had anything to do with my proposal. This was a coincidence. And she announces 750 billion would be printed by the ECB, but of course it would be given to the commercial banks. And the result is that it did not refloat the economy the way it would have had we given every European 2,000 euros.
Is that not the exact argument that Nancy Pelosi is having with Mnuchin of the Trump administration about the money that the Trump administration would be happy to put into a stimulus package, but where it would go versus Nancy Pelosi, they're there or thereabouts on the figures last I heard last night, but it's where the money would go is the difference between the Democrats and the Republicans.
Yes, indeed. Look, Trump wants more corporate tax cuts and tax cuts for the rich. It's not a question of ideology or issues of fairness. It just wouldn't work because, look, take Apple, right? You are familiar with the war chest of dollars or euros that Apple has. They have more than 200 billion stashed away. So if they're not investing that, why are they going to invest more if you give them a tax cut? They just won't. The problem with the super rich is they don't all know what to do with their money. Imagine the horror, in inverted commas. Imagine, Pat, that we're going to give you 10 billion today. What would you do with it? You can't put it under the mattress. It's just, your mattress is not big enough, right? Where do you put this money?
And the banks will charge me for minding that money, so I can't put it in the banks, or it'll just get smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah. Do you buy government debt? Yes, but again, they charge you because you have negative interest rates on government debt. Why? Because people expect a depression. People expect that, you know, 1 euro today is going to be able to buy more stuff in 10 years' time because of deflation as opposed to inflation. Therefore, you know, you have negative interest rates. Mm-hmm. So the Trump traditional trickle-down effect is not working, and it can't work. The problem with Nancy Pelosi is that she represents a political party that when they were in government, they didn't do what they are, you know, canvassing in favor of today.
Finally, Yanis, and I know you'll be having a long conversation with Áine Lawler on Bank Holiday Monday. I'll tell our listeners about that in a moment. Just some of the questions. What about capital risk from a listener, a News Talk listener? Who's going to be willing to risk their capital unless they get repaid a proportion for the risk they are taking?
I hope this is a question for another now. In my book, I describe the corporation as one where, you know, when you enter a corporation, if you believe in the corporation in which you are, you have your own personal capital and you have a choice. You can invest it in the corporation in which you are working, which I would hope you would do, because otherwise, why have you joined this particular corporation if you don't believe in it and you don't believe you're going to get your money back? Or because I'm a liberal lefty, you can invest it in another corporation. So in the blueprint of post-capitalist markets that I am putting together in another now, again, you'll have to take your risks in the same way you do now. The difference is that the macroeconomic dynamics will be such that you're not going to have spectacular crises like what we have now, caused by commercial banks together with share markets that create magnificent, huge surges of irrational exuberance, and then the bubbles that are built as a result burst with catastrophic results, as we know in Ireland, in Greece, and elsewhere.
A final point from Ed, who's another News Talk listener. History has proven that trying a so-called alternative to capitalism always leads to chaos, poverty, and dictatorship, Venezuela being the most recent case in point.
Look, I'm a leftist who would probably end up in a gulag and in a communist regime. That's why I'm a leftist who really is very, very careful about proposals for the future. You said that before, you mentioned the Soviet Union saying that something like it didn't work out very well. It was a tyranny. It was a catastrophe. You know, it was a gulag archipelago. So, yeah, but folks, let's not forget that, you know, when the French Revolution took place, which was the beginning of the democratic era. It's what gave rise to the American Revolution, right? Yes, it ended up a tyranny. Red terror was the result, or the kind of terror, revolutionary terror, happened. But that does not mean that democracy was a bad idea. So similarly, post-capitalism is coming in anyway, because capitalism is overturning itself. Very soon, we're not going to have capitalism. The question is, what kind of post-capitalism do we have? Will it be a utopia or will it be a dystopia? So with my book, Another Now, I'm trying to sketch out something closer to utopia. But it's not a utopia because, as you will see if you read the book, my characters in there are supremely skeptical of their own regime, the regime that they themselves created. And I think we should all be skeptical about every regime, this one, another one, an alternative one, and so on.
A final text for you, Yanis. Compelling. I could listen to Yanis all day. That's from Edel, one of our listeners. Former Greek finance minister, renowned political commentator and author, author of the new book, Another Now, Yanis Varoufakis. Thank you very much for joining us. Yanis will be in conversation at 6 o'clock this coming Monday. It's an online event as part of the ILF Dublin Festival. So check out ilfdublin.com if you want to participate in all of that. Yanis, thank you very much for joining us.